there were a lot of signs and miracles and wonders that went right along with his ministry. We find in Acts 1 and verse 3, and this was after Jesus Christ was resurrected, of course, that there were infallible proofs, verse 3. Jesus Christ presented himself, and of course Luke is writing here, but he presented himself alive, Acts 1 and verse 3, after his suffering by many infallible proofs, being seen by them during 40 days and speaking of the things pertaining to the kingdom of God. So we realize that even though he had been resurrected, and you would think people seeing him after his resurrection would recognize this is the Christ, there were still many proofs that were infallible. In other words, absolutely, there was no question that Jesus Christ was the resurrected Messiah. It was just absolute. Now, when we go through the life of Jesus Christ, we can go to a summary statement in the next chapter. This is Acts 2 and verse 22. When Peter was preaching and he was talking about the resurrected Messiah, notice what he said, Acts 2 and verse 22. Men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs. So basically what we're looking at in this sermon is how there were so many signs, there were so many miracles that God produced through Jesus Christ and the apostles later on. And then looking down the line, we're going to see that Satan the devil is going to counterfeit as much as possible to try to prove that his man, his Christ, so to speak, is the one to follow. So we see right from the very beginning that Jesus Christ was attested. That word attested is not one that we use today, at least I rarely would use the word attest, but it means to approve. A Bible usage is to point away from oneself, to point out, to show forth, to expose to view, to exhibit, to declare, to prove by argument or to demonstrate. So we see that Jesus Christ was approved by God that he would be the Christ, that he was the resurrected Messiah. And again, by miracles, wonders, and signs. And when it comes to the time of the end, this is what we all want to keep in mind. The miracles, wonders, and signs that will go along with the end time. From not just one source, but from two sources. Not from just God, but from also Satan the devil. The book of John, I was reading in this when I was... I don't know when I saw this. Maybe it was when I was preparing the sermon. But in John, it was pointed out, maybe in the introduction of this Bible that I have, that there are seven signs, it's called. The seven signs, basically, that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. And it names them, one being the changing of water into wine as one of the signs. And I have read, by the way, that during the time of Jesus Christ, most wine was pretty weak. It was like 2-3%. I don't know about the beer. Did I tell you about going to Boulevard Brewery a couple weeks ago? My wife and I, when Mr. Meeker was here, went to Boulevard Brewery, and we all had ordered a beer. And there's different names. This is Boulevard, different names. The beer I got, they received an 8-ounce glass. I got a 5-ounce glass. And I said, you know, like, why the 5-ounce glass? I had already had about 1.5 ounces just to taste. And so they gave me 5 ounces. And he said, well, this beer is 11.8 ounces. I drank 2 more ounces and I couldn't finish it because I was driving. So I gave it to my wife, who was really fun loving after that or whatever. But whatever the case. But I had heard that the wine was kind of a watered-down wine because they would be drinking huge amounts of wine, but being so, you know, low in alcoholic content, it wasn't that big. So I'll bet you Christ's wine was probably well, not probably, it was just exactly the right amount. Plus, it was a wonderful grape. Maybe a blend. I don't know. We want him to repeat that. If you're a wine lover, definitely I'd like to taste what he made. He can do it again. But that was one, changing water into wine, which was a sign, healing the royal official's son in Capernaum, healing the paralytic at Bethesda, feeding the 5,000, walking on water was another one, healing the man blind from birth, and then raising Lazarus from the dead. And of course, when we read that, we read that even the Pharisees believed when Christ rose or raised Lazarus from the dead. In all of this, we see in reading the New Testament and the life of Jesus Christ that God approves, shows, exposes to the public, and in the world tomorrow, there will be exposed to the world, will be exposed to the wonders and miracles, the entire world will be. But it's by miracles, wonders, and signs. Let's turn to Acts 26. Acts 26. And by looking at this, we will realize that just as the world knew about Jesus Christ, they understood that there were a lot of miracles, no doubt far and away from Jerusalem area. What happened with Jesus Christ was well known. Acts 26, starting out in verse 23. And he's talking to Festus here, that the Christ would suffer, that he would be first to rise from the dead and would proclaim light to the Jewish people and to the Gentiles. Now, as he thus made his defense, Festus said with a loud voice, "Paul, you are beside yourself. Much learning is driving you mad." But he said, "Well, I'm not mad, most noble Festus, but speak the words of truth and reason, for the king, before whom I also speak freely, knows these things. For I am convinced that none of these things escapes his attention, since this thing was not done in a corner." In other words, this is, well, if you hear of miracles, and you hear of many miracles, you're going to spread those miracles. You're going to spread the communication. You're going to communicate what happened. And so we read here, this is not done in a corner. You know, King, what happened. This would have come to your attention because many people would have been talking about it. Anytime you have a lot of miracles, wonders, and signs, you will. Now, we can go on TV and we can see people doing whatever they do. Oral Roberts years ago, you know, was the one who banged people on the top of their head and they fell back and they were healed. And I've seen this many, many times, especially years ago. It was not so much now do you see the healing, I don't think. At least I haven't. But years ago, it seemed to be more so than even now. Going on in Acts 2 now, verses 41 through 43, going back, actually. Acts 2, verses 41 and 43. It says that on that day of Pentecost, there were 3,000 souls who were added, starting out in verse 41. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, chapter 2, verse 41, and fellowship in the breaking of bread and prayers. And then fear came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were done. Now, if we keep this in mind, the word fear, it's very important to see the reaction or what happens when there are miracles and signs. We'll see it in a few moments. Because that word fear shows the emotions of people. Satan the devil is going to work with the emotions of people in the world. We know that emotions really can cause people to do things that they otherwise would not have done. Whether it's anger or whether it's crying, people are affected by emotions. We all are to a certain extent. And we should be. We're human and it's normal and it's right. But God uses signs and wonders to get to the emotions of people, and so does Satan the devil. This is what we have to keep in mind. So we come to Mark chapter 4 and verse 35. Mark chapter 4. And here it says, starting out in verse 35 of Mark 4. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, and this is Jesus Christ in a boat sleeping. And by the way, if you want to prove that pillows are spiritual, just read this verse. Let us cross over to the other side. Now, when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with him. A great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. There was Jacob's pillow, too, the rock, you know, and I think probably if you watched a lot of movies back in the 1950s, I went to one every single week in Chinook, Montana, at 8 cents a movie, you know, it's pretty cheap, but it was all the cowboy movies, and they slept on their, saddle, and they put a, you know, whatever, some, the blanket probably they put on the horse first. It wouldn't smell too good, maybe the top side of it, and it would be a pillow to sleep on. But anyway, he was asleep, and they said, don't you care, verse 38, that we are perishing? And then he arose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace be still. This is one of those times where you have a miracle that no doubt was communicated to the known world at the time. And notice he said to them, why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared, even though they were fearful at first with the wind and the storms. Then they feared exceedingly and said to one another, who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? Now, again, if we fast forward to the end time and we realize that Satan the devil is going to be using miracles, wouldn't this be also the reaction of people? Possibly us. If it's possible, even the elect could be deceived. We'll read that in a few moments. But will people be saying, who can this be? They'll say that of God's anointed ones, but also of Satan's anointed ones. And this is what we have to keep in mind. Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? Well, who's the prince of the power of the air as we stop to think of it? I'm not reading that scripture, but the prince of the power of the air is Satan the devil. And so if he has a prophet calling forth the wind to cease, Satan the devil is very well able to perform that act. But anyway, going on, we know the miracles are going to be done at the end time. And before we read the signs and wonders by Satan, we can ask the question, why did God perform the miracles of Jesus Christ? So let's take a look at John 20 first and see what the Bible says on why God uses miracles. Because I think that's very important. John 20, verse 30. John 20, verse 30. Truly, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, verse 31, that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. Now, as I said, I'm going to be, and I have, taken a look at the miracles of Jesus Christ, but also we have to think about the end time. If God, the Father of Jesus Christ, is using these signs to prove that Jesus is the Christ, then what is Satan the devil going to do? What is he going to do? We could take a look at John 2. I won't turn to it, but it says they believed in his name when they saw the signs that he did, all the way back in John 2. So Satan wants all mankind to believe that he is the God. He is the God of this world. He is named in 2 Corinthians 4:4, I believe, 1 Corinthians 4:4 maybe, that he is the God. It's when you have God, that's one thing, but the term the God is another, used of Jesus Christ once when you find Doubting Thomas saying, you know, I believe you are, I believe, you know, the God. it's used of God the Father, and it's used one time also of Satan the devil. In other words, he is the God of this world. In other words, they're thinking that he is the true God and that all of his doctrines are God's doctrines. And yet that would be Christmas and Easter and all Halloween and all the other doctrines. So we are now believing in, or the world is, in the God of this world. And of course, they're deceived. So what is Satan going to do at the end times? Well, just think in terms of signs and miracles. Now, when we go to Matthew 24, if we'll turn back there, I want to show us something that I hadn't really given much thought to until I was studying this subject. But it's interesting what Jesus Christ did after the disciples asked the question, what is the sign of your coming and of the end of this age? What did he say? And you stop to think of what he said right after that, and it kind of tells you what's going to happen at the end time. Gives you a perfect indicator, actually, of what's going to take place right before Christ comes. So Matthew chapter 24, verses 3 through 5. Now, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" And basically, let me tell you what Jesus Christ said in Missouri vernacular, okay? He said this, "Look, if we're going to talk about signs of my coming, let's first talk about the false Christ's signs." That's what he did. Because I usually go and, you know, I go over this real quickly, you know, don't be see. Okay, here's the signs, because we're all interested in the signs of his coming. Jesus Christ did not go in that direction. There was something so important about signs that he talked about somebody else's signs right away. "Many will come in my name." So he said, take heed. Okay, comment. "Take heed that no one deceives you." What did he know? Signs. There's going to be signs. There's going to be miracles. So when it comes to signs, be careful that no one deceives you with signs, because Satan is going to try to do it. "For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ." Now, what did we read in John as to why there were signs and miracles that God approved of with Christ? Well, to prove that he was the Christ. Does Satan know that? Did he hear it? Does he understand what God is doing? And the answer is, yeah, I'm going to copy that. I'll copy that. "I am the Christ and will deceive many." So he said, first of all, let no man deceive you. They're going to say, I am the Christ, and they will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of war. Actually, let's skip ahead here to verse 11. Verse 11. "Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many." When? Toward the time of the end. And of course, all through history, Christ didn't just leave it to the time of the end. He said, from the time that I ascend to heaven, basically, mankind is going to be deceived. And then coming down to verse 23. "Then if anyone says, look, here is the Christ." Here is the Christ. So there's a period coming where there will be a false Christ. Now, when I think of the end time, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself here, but I always think of the beast and false prophet. I don't think in terms of the beast and the false Christ, because I really think that's what Christ is saying here. Very end time, it'll be, he doesn't say beast, we know the beast is going to come, but it'll be the false Christ. That's why Jesus Christ himself used the term. "If anyone says, look, here is the Christ, or there, don't believe it. For false Christs It won't be the first time, in other words, that people appear and try to say they are the Christ. I remember in Pasadena, California, talking to the security there, where they told me there would be people coming and they wanted to talk to Mr. Armstrong. And most of the time they were the two witnesses. Well, most of the time they were a witness. Sometimes just one person was both witnesses, if you can believe that. They were both. That's harder. I think one came to the office on the fourth floor. They let one up one time. And the question was, if you are one of the prophets of God, make yourself disappear. I thought that was a good answer. You can make yourself disappear, we'll believe it. If you can't make yourself disappear, we'll make you disappear, basically. And maybe they didn't make it that high, but I heard that one of the evangelists allowed them to come in and talk to him. So going on here, for false Christs, verse 24, and prophets will arise and show great signs and wonders. False Christs both, and false prophets will show great signs and wonders so as to deceive, if possible, even the elect. Is it possible to deceive the elect? Now, some might say, well, if you're elect, you can't be deceived. And I think Paul made the statement, you know, I told you beforehand. Actually, Christ made that statement. I told you beforehand. See, verse 25, it's right there. See, I've told you beforehand. So he wants to remind us that, look, I'm telling you because this is going to happen. It will be in writing for the generation who sees all of this come to pass. It will be in writing where we can remember it. And the elect is less likely to be deceived when we're told already what's going to happen. So if we are deceived, then Christ would say, look, there was no excuse. You had no excuse. I told you exactly what was going to happen. And we'll see what the difference is between the two. You know, the true Christ and the false Christ. So at the end time, it seems there's going to be more than one Christ, but there'll be one main Christ. So let's go to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. Here we see, and if you have a hard time remembering how the books go together, after Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, it's always the books to the churches. And let me tell you something that I couldn't remember a long, long time ago, at least a month ago. But anyway, in memorizing the Bible, I always would tend to go to Timothy first and then Thessalonians when I would, you know, be memorizing. And I don't know why that happened, but it would be like Timothy and then Thessalonians, or Thessalonians and Timothy. Good way of remembering it is these are all the churches. These are the churches first. And then you have Timothy, Titus, Philemon after that. So you get the individuals after the churches. So always remember churches first. When we go before the pearly gates, you know, St. Peter, he's going to name the books of the Bible in order. And then he'll tell us, well, they're all out of order, so we'll give you a pass. So 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, and then we'll go to verses 8 through 11. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, starting out in verses 1 through 3. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, so now we know what we're talking about, the coming of Jesus Christ, and our gathering together to him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if from us, as though the day of Christ had come. So always the key for us, if you can't remember about, well, how many days before Jerusalem is attacked, you know, when is this all going to come, about the 1260, I think Mr. Caleb Froge has been talking about this a little bit. if we can't remember, you know, all the details of which comes first, what happens in 1335, for us in the church, even though we know what's going to happen also with Jerusalem, this is what we're going to key on right here. This will be our main focus. Let no one deceive you, verse 3, the elect. Let no one deceive us by any means, miracles, signs, wonders, for that day will not come until the falling away comes first. And this would apply to any falling away, including the one back in the 90s, 87, 88, 89, 90. Will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed. So there will be a man of lawlessness, transgressing the law, who promotes transgressing the law. Reveal the son of perdition. Verse 8. Then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. Okay, so before the coming of Christ, you have this taking place. And we realize there's going to be a 3.5-year period where the lawless one is going to be functioning, promoting the beast. We know that. The lawless one is going to be revealed. We will know it in the church because of the mere fact you read the word lawless. Lawless. It gives you kind of a heads up. I wrote for a couple books on Galatians. I think I may have mentioned to you there are 134 commentaries on the book of Galatians. 134 starting in 1865. And that's not counting the ones in the second century, many of which have been lost but are referred to. There's a lot of them. And in one of them, I ordered the two that were top. You have all of these scholars, and they are recommending the top book on Galatians. And I ordered the top two. And in the one I read where this guy quotes Brinsmead, does that bring back any thoughts? Brinsmead, for those of you who are around in 94, 95. Brinsmead is the guy who was quoted in church literature by the Worldwide Church of God showing how we shouldn't keep the law. And little did they know that the guy had become an atheist. So it's like, oh, I read that and I almost wanted to send the book back. But why should I send the book back? Because this book also... all these books, by the way, promote lawlessness. All 134 commentaries on Galatians. But they also quote a period of time where it wasn't lawlessness, where, and they give these five or six periods of time concerning the writing or referring to the book of Galatians. And not all of those periods recognized works of law, and that's the big phrase, works of law. Not all of them said it included the Ten Commandments. Most always say Ten Commandments. Okay. Some of them said, no, sacrifices. And that was Tertullian back in about 150 A.D. So early on, they recognized sacrifices as works of law. But whatever the case. Lawless. Lawless one is your key. You promote the breaking of the Sabbath. You promote the worldly holidays. You promote statues. And by the way, the Catholic Church includes the second commandment in the first. But you don't read it too much because we always have the shortened version. That is, you shall have no other gods besides the true God. But that's not the first commandment. That's only part of the first commandment. First commandment is, I am the God that brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. So it's that God. It's not just any God. Anyway, lawless one, lawless one, lawless one. The one who promotes the breaking of the commandments. There's our key right there. Whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan. With all power and signs, and lying wonders. And what's going along with that? People fearing exceedingly, saying, could this be the Christ? That's what Satan is going to do. He's the best counterfeit that you can find. Is this the Christ? In Revelation, we find the two witnesses, and we can take a quick look at that. Revelation 11. Revelation 11. And here it's verses 3 through 6. And this is, and by the way, in Revelation 11, I'll just mention that in the first verse, it says, I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood saying, rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. So you have the temple, and I refer back to 2 Thessalonians where it says this man of sin is going to dwell in the temple of God. But there's two sections of the temple of God. Some have felt, well, it's going to be someone in the church of God who's going to rise up at the very end time and be the lawless one. And I'm thinking there's a reason why God says you only need to measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. But leave out the court which is outside the temple. Don't measure it, for it's been given to the Gentiles. So there's two parts to me, at least. There's a reason I know that God writes everything. Because there's going to be those who look like they are the church of God. It is the counterfeit, the court of the Gentiles. Anyway, there may be another something else that you can add to it. I might be wrong on this. This is speculation, okay? So Greg Sargent may not have it down 100%. I'm only right 99% of the time. 99.9% of the time. No, of course, we can speculate. But anyway, notice verse 3, I'll give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees spoken of, where? Zechariah, I believe. And the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. And if anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from their mouth and devours their enemies. And if anyone wants to harm them, he must be killed in this manner. They have power to shut heaven so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. They have power. Now, you know, when we read that word power, you think Daniel 12 about the end time, and it says when the power of the holy people is shattered, that happens at the death of the two witnesses, because the power of the holy people is there with the two witnesses right until the end. The end doesn't come until the power of the holy people is shattered. And the greatest power given to any throughout the period of time that Jesus Christ established the church would be with the two witnesses at the end time. Makes sense, doesn't it? So, because we thought, well, you know, the church has no power in that last 3.5 years. There's going to be more understanding of God's way through the two witnesses by the entire world than any internet or TV or other media source can provide, for sure. So, you have this at the end time, and these guys are not very well liked. And what are you going to like best? The two witnesses or the beast and the false prophet? Which brings us to Revelation 13, 3 through 5. Revelation 13. I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, saying, having, that is, 7 heads and 10 horns, on his horns, 10 crowns, and on his heads, a blasphemous name. Referring to, of course, the background of this beast. That this isn't the first time that the pit has been opened and the demon has been let loose and has infiltrated, possessed the mind of the beast and false prophet. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard, feet like a bear, mouth like the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and his great authority. I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. Then we find going on here in verses 11 through 17. I saw another beast coming out of the earth. He had 2 horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon. Now, it spoke like a dragon. How does a dragon speak? I don't think the dragon here speaks, you know, with fire coming out and like that. I don't think so. That's what we see in the movie. This dragon is Satan the devil. And the beast is, and the lamb, better yet, is speaking like the dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. He performs great signs so that even he even makes fire come down from heaven in the earth in the sight of them. And I've often wondered, the two witnesses have fire coming out of their mouth. It says here that these men bring fire down from heaven. So which ones do you believe are the servants of God? Well, one calls fire down from heaven. Now, I don't know, you know, if what this is all about, but if this is literal, I would say, well, these guys, these two witnesses, they'd be the bad guys because they're doing it, you know, on their own. These other men are having God do it from heaven. And then it goes on to say, going all the way down to verse 17, he deceives those by those signs. Verse 14, why did Jesus Christ say, when asked about the sign of the end, let no man deceive you, there will be false Christs and signs and wonders. So he deceives those with signs, which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, and the image of the beast should speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their forehead, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the image of his name. So this man is promoting the beast who was very powerful. No one could make war against him. Now, when we go to Deuteronomy chapter 13, Deuteronomy 13, we're going to ask now how we can tell between the two. Deuteronomy 13, verse 1 through 14, and this is the only scripture we'll use, well, in the Old Testament, I believe, concerning how we know the difference between a prophet of God and a prophet of Satan the devil. Deuteronomy 13, okay, starting out verses 1 through 4. If there arise among you a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, and he gives you a sign or wonder, and the sign or the wonder comes to pass, of which he spoke to you, saying, let us go after gods which you have not known, and let us serve them. Okay, they've got a sign, they've got a wonder, you're going after another god. You don't listen to the words of the prophet or that dreamer of dreams, for the Lord your God is testing you. Is God going to test all his people at the end time? You know, there's a whole group, it's a religious group, that states we were spirit and before this physical life. And God sent us down here to be tested to see if we're going to follow Satan the devil. And if we don't follow Satan the devil, we go back up to heaven. Now, I don't see that in the Bible at all. But the fact is, God is testing us to see whether we are going to follow Satan the devil. And then it goes on to say, to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, you shall walk after the Lord your God and fear him. Don't fear this other entity, the beast or entity, the beast and false prophet. Don't fear them because they can do things that are exceedingly fearful. I didn't read where when the stone was rolled back from the tomb when Christ was resurrected, that the two guards feared exceedingly and could not even talk. You ever been so frightened you couldn't move? I haven't been, but I have in a dream. I've had dreams in the past, not recently. And in the dream, you just are, you know, you can't move in the dream. It's like you're locked. Anyway, keep the commandments and obey his voice. Keep the commandments. And that has not changed. Going on in verse 13. Certain corrupt men have gone out and they said, let us go and serve other gods. And then verse 17. If you do this, you'll be accursed. But if you don't, then notice verse 17. None of the accursed things shall remain in your hand, that the Lord may turn from the fierceness of his anger and show you mercy and have compassion. Because, verse 18, you've listened to the voice of the Lord your God to keep all his commandments, which I command you today to do what is right in the sight of God. Now, it is interesting when we talk about the one who's going to be coming along and deceiving the nations, deceiving the people of the whole world. And that would be, of course, the false prophet. But we've had a false prophet in the past who deceived. And there was one comment, if I can find it, and that is speaking, if I can find it, maybe I can't see it right now. But anyway, speaking great things is what pages said here. I think it's, let's see here. Oh, yes. Romans 13, 3 through 5. I don't know if I read that. I think I did. But let me come back to that, because I want to focus in on one statement there in Revelation 13, 3 through 5. He was given a mouth speaking great things. This is what my eye caught. And when I thought of that, I was reminded of something I had read about Adolf Hitler. Now, I think all of us, if we want to find a documentary on Adolf Hitler, it is one of the easiest things to find. Marion and I have taken Netflix. We've had Prime Video. And it seems to be Netflix. There are tons of stuff on World War II and on Adolf Hitler. And if you want to see a guy that could move audiences, in fact, Elena was staying in a location where there was books on this bookshelf. We were visiting her, and I pulled one out, and it actually showed Adolf Hitler standing in front of a mirror. He practiced his oratory, and it shows the pictures that he had taken while he was practicing. And he was practicing his gestures on what to do, at what point, and how to do it. And it's like, is this guy faking it? I remember in club years ago, for those of you who've been in Spokesman's Club, we said, use gestures. And I never did that, because I've always felt that a gesture should be automatic if you're going to use a gesture. But I remember some of the guys, one guy especially, who was practicing gestures in his speech, he said, and he looked at his hand for about 5 seconds, and it was like, that was his gesture, but he did it. Check it off. Use gestures. Okay, we did that. But anyway, this is Adolf Hitler. But here's what it says in a Live Science. It's www.livescience.com/54441-How Hitler Rose to Power. How Hitler Rose to Power. You could probably just type that in. How Hitler Rose to Power. And what it said here is, what makes the German Workers' Party different from the other 69 groups is that they don't have a Hitler. There were 69 German Workers' Party in 1930s, early 1930s. They don't have a Hitler whose speaker talent and tactics are really quite effective. This is Schlerns, a guy named Schlerns. Understanding the 10 most destructive human behaviors, they're quoting. Going down a little farther, it was Mueller who noticed that Hitler had a talent for rhetoric, and his recommendations helped Hitler land a job in the intelligence unit as a spy, keeping tabs as a spy, keeping tabs on the German Workers' Party. Then it went on to say, Hitler became a fiery speaker on the beer hall circuit and was willing to risk the humiliation of low turnout by organizing rallies in large spaces. So he risked the humiliation because it would be a large space if only a few showed up. That'd be humiliating to him. Goes on to say, his organizing talents propelled him to the top of the party's leadership. Hitler remained a cold presence in person. And this guy named Schlun said, he's not an interesting conversationalist. He's really sort of a dull person, except when he appears before an audience, when somehow a switch is turned on, he could milk an audience and shape it and get it to feel. Now, I read a letter from a young man who had talked to his grandma, who was lived during World War II, and he had always asked grandma and grandpa, well, what about Hitler? And they said, oh, Hitler, you know, we didn't go along with him at all. But after grandma died, he went through some of the letters she had kept. In one letter that she wrote to somebody, maybe your husband, she said, oh, when I hear Adolf Hitler, I feel like I can come home and grab a huge stump and pull it out of the ground. She wasn't moved by Hitler. No, he moved huge audiences. And we can go and look. And some say, oh, it's all fake. You know, all those people are fake. No, he moved a nation. And they were worshiping him right till the very end. They thought they were going to win. They did. And by the way, it does say that he was portrayed differently as a cultured gentleman, beloved by dogs and children. It says even the American Dog Kennel Gazette had this feature on Hitler as a dog lover. Showed him, and I've seen him, you know, with little kids and all. I guess kissing little kids doesn't remain with the presidents of the United States. It went along with dictator Hitler. But anyway, it goes on to say a little later on, these cozy domestic scenes help soften the image of the Hitler standing in front of monumental architecture, whipping crowds into frenzies. And he knew how to do it because he knew to start real kind of quiet, low-key, a little bit more. He just built it up slowly and carefully where finally he just, you know, was... Because if someone starts shouting, I know, in England we had a guy, he was an evangelist, and he shouted through the whole sermon. The first time I heard him, it was like, wow! The second time I heard him, it's like, wow. The third time I heard him, like, uh-huh. Okay, it's like an ordinary speech after a while. But if you start, you know, slowly and softly, in other words, it was a tactic. He knew what to do, and he was being moved by Satan the devil. Now, why am I saying all this? Because at the end time, the demon is the same. The demon is the same. And Satan the devil wants to deceive us by great swelling words. He does. And he's going to pick the guy he wants. And God will have mercy on him in the second resurrection. But Satan the devil is going to do anything and everything to try to deceive the elect. He just absolutely is. So let's go to the end of the sermon here and read two scriptures. 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 9 through 12, first of all. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 9 through 12. And if we don't go away from this sermon remembering that Satan is going to come along with great signs and wonders trying to deceive us, then I haven't done my job today at all. And I hope certainly I have. So where did I go? I went to Timothy. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 9 through 12. It says, the coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. Before Christ comes. Because it says, let no one deceive you, back in verse 3, by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away comes first and the man of sin is revealed. So he's going to be revealed, And what's revealed? The coming of the lawless one, when he's revealed, it's according to the working of Satan with power, signs, and lying wonders. And with all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who did not believe the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Now, doesn't that tell us what to watch for? How are we going to know the one who promotes disobedience? And finally, I said there would be two scriptures, 1 John chapter 3, verses 4 through 8. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4. Whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. No question when we talk about the son of perdition, the man of lawlessness, that it's back to transgressing the law, sin. Verse 5, you know that he was manifested to take away our sins, that is Jesus Christ, and in him there is no sin. Whoever abides in him does not sin. Whoever sins has neither seen him nor known him. You know, there's this group, I think there's this young group that wants to know God, okay? Oh, I need to know God. And what is it? Well, if we want to know God, what do? We keep his commandments and we know him. Knowing God can be a feeling, but when people use this term, I want to know God, they're thinking, well, I have not felt God. Well, we all feel close to God in prayer. We should feel a love for God. We should feel a proper awe for God and a reverence for God. There's those feelings that come in. But oftentimes feelings make us do those things that are wrong if it's a wrong feeling. We've got to be careful of that because it's music that can whip people into a wrong feeling. You know, if I were to see a movie where there's a sad scene and there is no music, my emotions, there's two sides of my brain. One is methodical thinking, they deserve what they got. The other side is the music, which is like, oh, tears will start coming. It's like the one side of the brain, though, just as far as the facts, well, absolutely, they should die. But the other is tears rolling down because of the music. Okay? Now, what is Satan doing? Martin Luther created a new song, I think, every single week. Every single week. He wanted, and his songs can be very good. I'm not saying I still have some favorite songs of Martin Luther, at least one. But let's go on here and finish up. Little children, let no one deceive you. He who practices righteousness is righteous, just as he is righteous. He who sins is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. For this purpose, the Son of God was manifested, that we might destroy the works of the devil. So let's make sure, verse 7, let no one deceive you. If they are righteous, they will be doing righteousness. Satan is going to try with all his might. He'll have music, he'll have anything and everything that will make us feel a certain way. But if it causes us to do what is wrong, then we have to put that aside. We have to control ourselves. We don't want to be disqualified. It says discipline yourself in the Bible so you're not disqualified, and recognize that Satan the devil absolutely will not win when it comes to us personally.